Morgan Stern, and he put it in his baby boy, and this is the result. The woman placed her hand gently, almost as a caress, against the glass surface of Sebastian's coffin. There was the oddest smile on her face. You might almost say that, in a way, I am Jonathan's mother. I told you that address didn't mean anything, Alex said. Isabel ignored him. The moment they had stepped through the doors of the building, the ruby pendant around her neck had pulsed faintly, like the beat of a distant heart. That meant demonic presence. Under other circumstances, she would have expected her brother to sense the weirdness of the place just like she did, but he was clearly too sunk in gloom about Magnus to concentrate. Get your witch light, she said to him. I left mine at home. He shot her an irritated look. It was dark in the lobby, dark enough that a normal human wouldn't have been able to see. Maya and Jordan both had the excellent night vision of werewolves. They were standing at opposite ends of the room, Jordan examining the big marble lobby desk, and Maya leaning against the far wall, apparently examining her rings. You're supposed to bring it with you everywhere, Alec replied. Oh, did you bring your censer? She snapped. I didn't think so. At least I have this. She tapped the pendant. I can tell you that there's something here. Something demonic. Jordan's head snapped around. There are demons here? I don't know. Maybe only one. It pulsed and faded, Isabel admitted. But it's too big a coincidence for this just to have been the wrong address. We have to check it out. A dim light rose up all around her. She looked over and saw Alec holding up his witch light, its blaze contained by his fingers. It threw strange shadows across his face, making him look older than he was, his eyes a darker blue. So let's get going, he said. We'll take it one floor at a time. They moved toward the elevator, Alec first, then Isabel, Jordan and Maya dropping into line behind them. Isabel's boots had soundless runes carved into the soles, but Maya's heels clicked on the marble floor as she walked. Frowning, she paused to discard them and went barefoot the rest of the way. As Maya stepped into the elevator, Isabel noticed that she wore a gold ring around her left big toe, set with a turquoise stone. Jordan, glancing down at her feet, said in a surprised tone, I remember that ring. I bought that for you at... Shut up, Maya said, hitting the door close button. The door slid shut as Jordan lapsed into silence. They paused at every floor. Most were still under construction. There were no lights, and wires hung down from the ceilings like vines. Windows had plywood nailed over them. Drop cloths blew in the faint wind like ghosts. Isabel kept a firm hand on her pendant, but nothing happened until they reached the 10th floor. As the doors opened, she felt a flutter against the inside of her cupped palm, as if she had been holding a tiny bird there, and it had beaten its wings. She spoke in a whisper. There's something here. Alec just nodded. Jordan opened his mouth to say something, but Maya elbowed him, hard. Isabel slipped past her brother into the hall outside the elevators. The ruby was pulsing and vibrating against her hand now like a distressed insect. Behind her, Alec whispered, Sandalphon. Light blazed up around Isabel, illuminating the hall. Unlike some of the other floors they had seen, this one seemed at least partly finished. Bare granite walls rose around her, and the floor was smooth black tile. A corridor led in two directions. One ended in a heap of construction equipment and tangled wires. The other ended in an archway. Beyond the archway, black space beckoned. Isabel turned to look back at her companions. Alec had put away his witchlight stone and was holding a blazing seraph blade, lighting the interior of the elevator like a lantern. Jordan had produced a large, brutal-looking knife and was gripping it in his right hand. Maya seemed to be in the process of putting her hair up. When she lowered her hands, she was holding a long, razor-tipped pin. Her nails had grown, too, and her eyes held a feral greenish gleam.
"Follow me," Isabel said, quietly.
"Tap, tap," went the ruby against Isabel's throat as she went down the hall, like the prodding of an insistent finger. She didn't hear the rest of them behind her, but she knew they were there from the long shadows cast against the dark granite walls. Her throat was tight, her nerves singing, the way they always did before she walked into battle. This was the part she liked least, the anticipation before the release of violence. During a fight, nothing mattered but the fight itself. Now she had to struggle to keep her mind on the task at hand. The archway loomed above them. It was carved marble, oddly old-fashioned for such a modern building, its sides decorated with scrollwork. Isabel glanced up briefly as she passed through, and almost started. The face of a grinning gargoyle was carved into the stone, leering down at her. She made a face at it, and turned to look at the room she had entered. It was vast, high-ceilinged, clearly meant to someday be a full loft apartment. The walls were floor-to-ceiling windows, giving out onto a view of the East River, with Queens in the distance. The Coca-Cola sign flashing blood red and navy blue down onto the black water. The lights of surrounding buildings hovered glittering in the night air like tinsel on a Christmas tree. The room itself was dark, and full of odd, humped shadows, spaced at regular intervals, low to the ground. Isabel squinted, puzzled. They weren't animate. They appeared to be chunks of square, blocky furniture. But what?
"Alec?" she said softly.
Her pendant was writhing as if alive, its ruby heart painfully hot against her skin. In a moment, her brother was beside her. He raised his blade, and the room was full of light. Isabel's hand flew to her mouth.
"Oh, dear God," she whispered. "Oh, by the angel, no."
"You're not his mother." Simon's voice cracked as he said it. Lilith didn't even turn to look at him. She still had her hands on the glass coffin. Sebastian floated inside, silent and unaware. His feet were bare, Simon noticed. "He has a mother. Clary's mother. Clary's his sister. Sebastian, Jonathan, won't be too pleased if you hurt her." Lilith looked up at that and laughed. "A brave attempt, Daylighter," she said. "But I know better. I saw my son grow up, you know. Often I visited him in the form of an owl. I saw how the woman who had given birth to him hated him. He has no love lost for her, nor should he. Nor does he care for his sister. He is more like me than he is like Jocelyn Morgenstern." Her dark eyes moved from Simon to Jace and Clary. They had not moved, not really. Clary stood still in the circle of Jace's arms, with the knife near her throat. He held it easily, carelessly, as if he were barely paying attention, but Simon knew how quickly Jace's seeming uninterest could explode into violent action. "Jace," said Lilith, "step into the circle. Bring the girl with you." Obediently, Jace moved forward, pushing Clary ahead of him. As they crossed the barrier of the black-painted line, the runes inside the line flashed a sudden brilliant red, and something else lit as well. A rune on the left side of Jace's chest, just above his heart, glowed suddenly, with such brightness that Simon closed his eyes. Even with his eyes closed, he could still see the rune, a vicious swirl of angry lines printed against the inside of his eyelids. "Open your eyes, Daylighter," Lilith snapped. "The time has come. Will you give me your blood, or will you refuse? You know the price if you do." Simon looked down at Sebastian and his coffin, and did a double take. A rune that was the twin of the one that had just flashed on Jace's chest was visible on his bare chest as well, just beginning to fade as Simon stared down at him. In a moment it was gone, and Sebastian was still and white again, unmoving, unbreathing. Dead. "I can't bring him back for you," Simon said. "He's dead. I'd give you my blood, but he can't swallow it." Her breath hissed through her teeth in exasperation, and for a moment her eyes glowed with a harsh acidic light. "First you must bite him," she said. "You are a Daylighter. Angel blood runs through your body, through your blood and tears. through the fluid in your fangs. Your daylighter blood will revive him enough that he can swallow and drink. Bite him, and give him your blood, and bring him back to me. Simon stared at her wildly. But what you're saying? You're saying I have the power to bring back the dead. Since you've been a daylighter, you've had the power, she said, but not the right to use it. The right? She smiled, tracing the tip of one of her long red-painted nail across the top of Sebastian's coffin. History is written by the winners, they say, she said. There might not be so much of a difference between the side of light and the side of dark as you suppose. After all, without the dark, there is nothing for the light to burn away. Simon looked at her blankly. Balance, she clarified. There are laws older than you can imagine, and one of them is that you cannot bring back what is dead. When the soul has left the body, it belongs to death, and it cannot be taken back without a price to pay. And you're willing to pay it? For him? Simon gestured towards Sebastian. He is the price. She threw her head back and laughed. It almost sounded like human laughter. If the light brings back a soul, then the dark has the right to bring one back as well. This is my right. Or perhaps you should ask your little friend Clary what I'm talking about. Simon looked at Clary. She looked as if she might pass out. Raziel, she said faintly. When Jace died...
Jace died?
Simon's voice went up an octave. Jace, despite being the subject under discussion, remained serene and expressionless, his knife hand steady.
Valentine stabbed him, Clary said in an almost whisper. And then the angel killed Valentine, and he said I could have anything I wanted. And I said I wanted Jace back. I wanted him back, and he brought him back, for me.
Her eyes were huge in her small white face.
He was dead for only a few minutes, hardly any time at all.
It was enough, breathed Lilith. I was hovering near my son during his battle with Jace. I saw him fall and die. I followed Jace to the lake. I watched as Valentine slew him. And then as the angel raised him again. I knew that was my chance. I raced back to the river and took my son's body from it. I kept it, preserved it for just this moment. She looked fondly down at the coffin. Everything in balance. An eye for an eye. A tooth for a tooth. A life for a life. Jace is the counterweight. If Jace lives, then so shall Jonathan. Simon couldn't tear his eyes away from Clary.
What is she saying? About the angel, it's true, he said. And you never told me?
To his surprise, it was Jace who answered. Brushing his cheek against Clary's hair, he said. It was our secret. Clary's green eyes flashed, but she didn't move.
So you see, Daylighter, said Lilith. I am only taking what's mine by right. The law says that the one who was first brought back must be here in the circle when the second is returned.
She indicated Jace with a contemptuous flick of her finger.
He is here. You are here. All is in readiness. Then you don't need Clary, said Simon. Leave her out of it. Let her go.
Of course I need her. I need her to motivate you. I cannot hurt you, Markbearer, or threaten you, or kill you. But I can cut out your heart when I cut out her life, and I will. She looked toward Clary, and Simon's gaze followed hers. Clary. She was so pale that she looked almost blue, though perhaps it was the cold. Her green eyes were vast in her pale face. A trickle of drying blood spilled from her collarbone to the neckline of her dress, now spotted with red. Her hands hung at her sides, loose, but they were shaking. Simon saw her as she was, but also as she had been when she was 7 years old. Skinny arms and freckles, and those blue plastic barrettes she'd worn in her hair until she was 11. He thought of the first time he'd noticed she had a real girl shape under the baggy t-shirt and jeans she always wore, and how he hadn't been sure if he should look or look away. He thought of her laugh, and her quick pencil moving across a page, leaving intricately designed images behind. Spired castles, running horses, brightly colored characters she'd made up in her head.
You can walk to school by yourself, her mother said, but only if Simon goes with you.
He thought of her hand in his when they crossed the street, and his own sense of the awesome task he had undertaken, the responsibility for her safety. He'd been in love with her once, and maybe some part of him always would be, because she had been his first. But that wasn't what mattered now. She was Clary. She was part of him. She always had been, and would be forever. As he stared at her, she shook her head, very slightly.
He knew what she was saying. Don't do it. Don't give her what she wants. Let whatever happens to me happen. He stepped into the circle. As his feet passed over the painted line, he felt a shiver, like an electric shock, go through him. All right, he said. I'll do it. No, Clary cried. But Simon didn't look at her. He was watching Lilith, who smiled a cool, gloating smile, as she raised her left hand and passed it across the surface of the coffin. The lid of it vanished, peeling back in a way that reminded Simon bizarrely of peeling back the lid of a tin of sardines. As the top layer of glass pulled away, it melted and ran, dripping down the sides of the granite pedestal, crystallizing into tiny shards of glass as the drops struck the ground. The coffin was open now, like a fish tank. Sebastian's body drifted inside, and Simon thought he could once again see the flash of the rune on his chest as Lilith reached into the tank. As Simon watched, she took Sebastian's dangling arms and crossed them over his chest with an oddly tender gesture, tucking the bandaged one under the one that was whole. She brushed a lock of his wet hair away from his still, white forehead and stepped back, shaking milky water from her hands. To your work, Daylighter, she said. Simon moved toward the coffin. Sebastian's face was slack, his eyelids still, no pulse in his throat. Simon remembered how much he had wanted to drink Maureen's blood, how he had craved the feeling of his teeth sinking into her skin and freeing that salty blood beneath. But this was feeding off a corpse. The very thought made his stomach turn. Though he wasn't looking at her, he was aware of Clary watching him. He could feel her breath as he bent over Sebastian. He could sense Jace, too, watching him out of blank eyes. Reaching into the coffin, he closed his hands around Sebastian's cold, slippery shoulders. Biting back the urge to be sick, he bent and sank his teeth into Sebastian's throat. Black demon blood poured into his mouth, as bitter as poison.
Isabel moved silently among the stone pedestals. Alec was with her, Sandalphon in his hand, sending light winging through the room. Maya was in one corner of the room, bent over and retching, her hand braced against the wall. Jordan hovered over her, looking as if he wanted to reach out and stroke her back, but was afraid of being rebuffed. Isabel didn't blame Maya for throwing up. If she hadn't had years of training, she would have thrown up herself. She had never seen anything like what she was looking at now. There were dozens, maybe 50, of the stone pedestals in the room. Atop each one was a low crib-like basket. Inside each basket was a baby, and every one of the babies was dead. She had held out hope at first, as she walked up and down the rows, that she might find one alive. But these children had been dead for some time. Their skin was gray, their small faces bruised and discolored. They were wrapped in thin blankets, and though it was cold in the room, Isabel didn't think it was cold enough for them to have frozen to death. She wasn't sure how they had died. She couldn't bear to investigate too closely. This was clearly a matter for the Clave. Alec, behind her, had tears running down his face. He was cursing under his breath by the time they reached the last of the pedestals. Maya had straightened up and was leaning against the window. Jordan had given her some kind of cloth, maybe a handkerchief, to hold to her face. The cold white lights of the city burned behind her, cutting through the dark glass like diamond drills. "Is," Alec said. "Who could have done something like this? Why would someone, even a demon?" He broke off. Isabel knew what he was thinking about. Max, when he had been born. She had been 7, Alec 9. They had bent over their little brother in the cradle, amused and enchanted by this fascinating new creature. They'd played with his little fingers, laughed at the weird faces he made when they tickled him. Her heart twisted. Max. As she had moved down the lines of little cribs, now turned into little coffins, a sense of overwhelming dread had begun to press down on her. She couldn't ignore the fact that the pendant around her neck was glowing with a harsh, steady glow. The sort of glow she might have expected if she were facing down a greater demon.
She thought of what Clary had seen in the morgue in Beth Israel. He looked just like a normal baby, except for his hands. They were twisted into claws. With great care, she reached into one of the cribs, careful not to touch the baby. She twitched aside the thin blanket that wrapped its body. She felt the breath puff out of her in a gasp. Ordinary chubby baby arms, round baby wrists. The hands looked soft and new. But the fingers were twisted into claws, as black as burned bone, tipped with sharp little talons. She took an involuntary step back. What? Maya moved toward them. She still looked sickened, but her voice was steady. Jordan followed her, hands in his pockets. What did you find? She asked. By the angel. Alec, beside Isabel, was looking down into the crib. Is this like the baby Clary was telling you about? The one at Beth Israel? Slowly, Isabel nodded. I guess it wasn't just the one baby, she said. Someone's been trying to make a lot more of them. More Sebastians. Why would anyone want more of him? Alec's voice was full of naked hatred. He was fast and strong, Isabel said, and almost hurt physically to say anything complimentary about the boy who had killed her brother and tried to kill her. I guess they're trying to breed a race of super warriors. It didn't work. Maya's eyes were dark with sadness. A noise so soft it was almost inaudible teased at the edge of Isabel's hearing. Her head jerked up, her hand going to her belt where her whip was coiled. Something in the thick shadows at the edge of the room, near the door, moved. Just the faintest flicker, but Isabel had already broken away from the others and was running for the door. She burst out into the hallway near the elevators. There was something there, a shadow that had broken free of the greater darkness and was moving, edging along the wall. Isabel picked up speed and threw herself forward, knocking the shadow to the floor. It wasn't a ghost. As they went down together in a heap, Isabel surprised a very human-sounding grunt of surprise out of the shadowy figure. They hit the ground together and rolled. The figure was definitely human, slight and shorter than Isabel, wearing a gray warm-up suit and sneakers. Sharp elbows came up, jabbing into Isabel's collarbone, a knee dug into her solar plexus. She gasped and rolled aside, feeling for her whip. By the time she got it free, the figure was on its feet. Isabel rolled onto her stomach, flicking the whip forward. The end of it coiled around the stranger's ankle and pulled tight. Isabel jerked the whip back, yanking the figure off its feet. She scrambled to her feet, reaching with her free hand for her steely, which was tucked down the front of her dress. With a quick slash, she finished the Nyx mark on her left arm. Her vision adjusted quickly. The whole room seemed to fill with light as the night vision rune took effect. She could see her attacker more clearly now, a thin figure in a gray warm-up suit and gray sneakers, scrambling backward until its back hit the wall. The hood of the suit had fallen back, exposing the face. The head was shaved cleanly bald, but the face was definitely female, with sharp cheekbones and big dark eyes. "Stop it," Isabel said, and pulled hard on the whip. The woman cried out in pain. "Stop trying to crawl away." The woman bared her teeth. "Worm," she said. "Unbeliever, I will tell you nothing." Isabel jammed her steely back into her dress. "If I pull hard enough on this whip, it'll cut through your leg." She gave the whip another flick, tightening it, and moved forward until she was standing in front of the woman, looking down at her. "Those babies," she said. "What happened to them?" The woman gave a bubbling laugh. "They were not strong enough. Weak stock, too weak." "Too weak for what?" When the woman didn't answer, Isabel snapped. "You can tell me or lose your leg. Your choice. Don't think I won't let you bleed to death here on the floor. Child murderers don't deserve mercy." The woman hissed like a snake. "If you harm me, she will smite you down." "Who?" Isabel broke off.
remembering what Alec had said. Talto is another name for Lilith. You might say she's the demon goddess of dead children. Lilith, she said, you worship Lilith. You did all this for her? Isabel? It was Alec, carrying the light of Sandalphon before him. What's going on? Maya and Jordan are searching, looking for any more children, but it looks like they were all in the big room. What's going on here? This person, Isabel said with disgust, is a cult member of the Church of Talto. Apparently they worship Lilith, and they've murdered all these babies for her. Not murder! The woman struggled upright. Not murder! Sacrifice! They were tested and found weak. Not our fault! Let me guess, Isabel said. You tried injecting the pregnant women with demon blood. But demon blood is toxic stuff. The babies couldn't survive. They were born deformed. And then they died. The woman whimpered. It was a very slight sound, but Isabel saw Alec's eyes narrow. He had always been the one of them that was best at reading people. One of those babies, he said. It was yours. How could you inject your own child with demon blood? The woman's mouth trembled. I didn't. We were the ones who took the blood injections. The mothers made us stronger, faster, our husbands too. But we got sick, sicker and sicker. Our hair fell out, our nails. She raised her hands, showing the blackened nails, the torn, bloody nail beds where some had fallen away. Her arms were dotted with blackish bruises. We're all dying, she said. There was a faint sound of satisfaction in her voice. We will be dead in days. She made you take poison, Alec said. And yet you worship her? You don't understand. The woman sounded hoarse, dreamy. I had nothing before she found me. None of us did. I was on the streets, sleeping on subway gratings so I wouldn't freeze. Lilith gave me a place to live, a family to take care of me. Just to be in her presence is to be safe. I never felt safe before. You've seen Lilith, Isabel said, struggling to keep the disbelief from her voice. She was familiar with demon cults. She had done a report on them once, for Hodge. He had given her high marks on it. Most cults worship demons they had imagined or invented. Some managed to raise weak minor demons who either killed them all when set free or contented themselves with being served by the cult members, all their needs attended to, and little asked of them in return. She had never heard of a cult who worshipped a greater demon in which the members had ever actually seen that demon in the flesh, much less a greater demon as powerful as Lilith, the mother of warlocks. You've been in her presence? The woman's eyes fluttered half shut. Yes, with her blood in me, I can feel when she is near, as she is now. Isabel couldn't help it. Her free hand flew to her pendant. It had been pulsing on and off since they'd entered the building. She had assumed it was because of the demon blood and the dead children. But the presence nearby of a greater demon would make even more sense. She's here? Where is she? The woman seemed to be drifting off into sleep. Upstairs, she said vaguely. With the vampire boy. The one who walks by day. She sent us to fetch him for her. But he was protected. We could not lay hands on him. Those who went to find him died. Then, when Brother Adam returned and told us the boy was guarded by holy fire, Lady Lilith was angry. She slew him where he stood. He was lucky to die by her hand. So lucky. Her breath rattled. And she is clever, Lady Lilith. She found another way to bring the boy.
The whip dropped from Isabel's suddenly limp hand.
Simon? She brought Simon here? Why?
None that go unto her, the woman breathed. Return again.
Isabel dropped to her knees, seizing up the whip.
"Stop it," she said in a voice that shook. "Stop yammering and tell me where he is. Where did she take him? Where is Simon? Tell me or I'll..."
"Isabel," Alex spoke heavily. "Is. There's no point. She's dead." Isabel stared at the woman in disbelief. She had died, it seemed, between one breath and the next, her eyes wide open, her face set in slack lines. It was possible to see now that beneath the starvation and the baldness and the bruising, she had probably been quite young, not more than 20.
"God damn it!"
"I don't get it," Alex said. "What does a greater demon want with Simon? He's a vampire. Granted, a powerful vampire, but..." "The mark of Cain," Isabel said distractedly. "This must have something to do with the mark. It's got to." She moved toward the elevator and jabbed at the call button. If Lilith was really Adam's first wife, and Cain was Adam's son, then the mark of Cain is nearly as old as she is. "Where are you going?" "She said they were upstairs," Isabel said. "I'm going to search every floor until I find him."
"She can't hurt him, Izzy," said Alec in the reasonable voice Isabel detested.
"I know you're worried, but he's got the mark of Cain. He's untouchable. Even a greater demon can't harm him. No one can."
Isabel scowled at her brother.
"So what do you think she wants him for, then? So she'll have someone to pick up her dry cleaning during the day? Really, Alec?"
There was a ping, and the arrow above the farthest elevator lit up. Isabel started forward as the doors began to open. Light flooded out, and after the light, a wave of men and women, bald, emaciated, and dressed in gray tracksuits and sneakers, poured out. They were brandishing crude weapons culled from the debris of construction, jagged shards of glass, torn off chunks of rebar, concrete blocks. None of them spoke. In a silence as total as it was eerie, they surged from the elevator as one and advanced on Alec and Isabel.
Chapter 18. Scars of Fire. Clouds had rolled in over the river, the way they sometimes did at night, bringing a thick mist with them. It didn't hide what was happening on the roof, just laid a sort of dimming fog over everything else. The buildings, rising all around them, were murky pillars of light, and the moon glowed barely, a muffled lamp, through the low scudding clouds. The broken bits of the glass coffin scattered across the tiled ground shone like shards of ice, and Lilith, too, shone pale under the moon, watching Simon as he bent over Sebastian's still body, drinking his blood. Clary could hardly bear to watch. She knew Simon hated what he was doing. She knew he was doing it for her. For her. And even, a little bit, for Jace. And she knew what the next step in the ritual would be. Simon would give up his blood willingly to Sebastian. And Simon would die. Vampires could die when their blood was drained. He would die, and she would lose him forever. And it would, all of it, be her own fault. She could feel Jace behind her, his arms still tight around her, the soft, regular beat of his heart against her shoulder blades. She remembered the way he had held her on the steps of the Accords Hall in Idris. The sound of the wind in the leaves as he'd kissed her, his hands warm on either side of her face, the way she had felt his heart beating and thought that no one else's heart beat like his, like every pulse of his blood matched her own. He had to be in there somewhere, like Sebastian inside his glass prison. There had to be some way to reach him. Lilith was watching Simon as he bent over Sebastian, her dark eyes wide and fixed. Clary and Jace might as well not have been there at all.
"Jace," Clary whispered. "Jace, I don't want to watch this."
She pressed back against him as if she were trying to snuggle into his arms, then pretended a wince as the knife brushed the side of her throat.
"Please, Jace," she whispered. "You don't need the knife. You know I can't hurt you."
But why? I just want to look at you. I want to see your face. She felt his chest rise and fall once, fast. A shudder went through him, as if he were fighting something, pushing against it. Then he moved, the way only he could move, so swiftly it was like a flash of light. He kept his right arm tight around her. His left hand slid the knife into his belt. Her heart leaped wildly. I could run, she thought. But he would only catch her, and it was only a moment. Seconds later, both arms were around her again, his hands on her arms, turning her. She felt his fingers trail over her back, her bare, shivering arms, as he spun her to face him. She was looking away from Simon now, away from the demon woman, though she could still feel their presence at her back, shivering up her spine. She looked up at Jace. His face was so familiar. The lines of it, the way his hair fell across his forehead, the faint scar over his cheekbone, another at his temple. His eyelashes a shade darker than his hair. His eyes were the color of pale yellow glass. That was where he was different, she thought. He still looked like Jace, but his eyes were clear and blank, as if she were looking through a window into an empty room. I'm afraid, she said. He stroked her shoulder, sending sparks winging through her nerves. With a feeling of sickness, she realized her body still responded to his touch. I won't let anything happen to you. She stared at him. You really think that, don't you? Somehow, you can't see the disconnect between your actions and your intentions. Somehow, she's taken that away from you. You won't be able to stop her, she said. She's going to kill me, Jace. He shook his head. No, she wouldn't do that. Clary wanted to scream, but she kept her voice deliberate, careful, calm. I know you're in there, Jace, the real you. She pressed closer to him. The buckle on his belt dug into her waist. You could fight her. It had been the wrong thing to say. He tensed all over, and she saw a flash of anguish in his eyes, the look of an animal in a trap. In another instant, it had turned to hardness. I can't. She shivered. The look on his face was awful. So awful. At her shudder, his eyes softened. Are you cold? He said. And for a moment, he sounded like Jace again, concerned about her well-being. It made her throat hurt. She nodded. The physical cold was the furthest thing from her mind. Can I put my hands inside your jacket? He nodded. His jacket was unbuttoned. She slid her arms inside, her hands touching his back lightly. Everything was eerily silent. The city seemed frozen inside an icy prism. Even the light radiating off the buildings around them was still and cold. He breathed slowly, steadily. She could see the rune on his chest through the torn fabric of his shirt. It seemed to pulse when he breathed. It was sickening, she thought, attached to him like that, like a leech, sucking out what was good, what was Jace. She remembered what Luke had said to her about destroying a rune. If you disfigure it enough, you can minimize or destroy its power. Sometimes in battle the enemy will try to burn or slice off a Shadow Hunter's skin, just to deprive them of the power of their runes. She kept her eyes fixed on Jace's face. Forget about what's happening, she thought. Forget about Simon, about the knife at your throat. What you say now matters more than anything you've ever said before. Remember what you said to me in the park? She whispered. He looked down at her, startled. What? When I told you I didn't speak Italian. I remember what you told me, what that quote meant. You said it meant love is the most powerful force on earth, more powerful than anything else. A tiny line appeared between his eyebrows. I don't... Yes, you do. Tread carefully, she told herself. But she couldn't help it. Couldn't help the strain that surfaced in her voice. You remember, the most powerful force there is, you said. Stronger than heaven or hell. It has to be more powerful than Lilith, too. Nothing. He stared at her as if he couldn't hear her. It was like shouting down into a black, empty tunnel. Jace, Jace, Jace. I know you're in there. There's a way you could protect me and still do what she wants, she said. Wouldn't that be the best thing? She pressed her body closer against his, feeling her stomach twist. It was like holding Jace and not like it, all at the same time. Joy and horror mixed together. And she could feel his body react to her, the drumbeat of his heart in her ears, her veins. He had not stopped wanting her. Whatever layers of control Lilith exerted over his mind. I'll whisper it to you, she said, brushing her lips against his neck. She breathed in the scent of him, as familiar as the scent of her own skin. Listen. She tilted her face up, and he leaned down to hear her. And her hand moved from his waist to clamp down on the hilt of the knife in his belt. She whipped it upward, just as he had shown her when they had trained, balancing its weight in her palm, and she slashed the blade across the left side of his chest in a wide, shallow arc. Jace cried out, more in surprise than pain, she guessed, and blood burst from the cut, spilling down his skin, obscuring the rune. He put his hand to his chest. When it came away red, he stared at her, his eyes wide, as if somehow he was genuinely hurt, genuinely unable to believe in her betrayal. Claire spun away from him as Lilith cried out. Simon was no longer bending over Sebastian. He had straightened up and was staring down at Clary, the back of his hand jammed against his mouth. Black demon blood dripped from his chin onto his white shirt. His eyes were wide. Jace? Lilith's voice soared upward in astonishment. Jace, get hold of her! I order it! Jace didn't move. He was staring from Clary to Lilith, at his bloody hand, and then back again. Simon had begun to back away from Lilith. Suddenly he stopped with a jerk and bent double, falling to his knees. Lilith whirled away from Jace and advanced on Simon, her hard face contorted. Get up! She shrieked. Get on your feet! You drink his blood! Now he needs yours! Simon struggled to a sitting position, then slid limply to the ground. He retched, coughing up black blood. Clary remembered him and Idris, saying that Sebastian's blood was like poison. Lilith drew back her foot to kick him, then staggered back as if an invisible hand had pushed her, hard. Lilith screeched. Not words, just a scream like the cry of an owl. It was a sound of unadulterated hatred and rage. It was not a sound a human being could have made. It felt like jagged shards of glass being driven into Clary's ears. She cried out. Leave Simon alone! He's sick! Can't you see he's sick? She was immediately sorry she'd spoken. Lilith turned slowly, her gaze sliding over Jace, cold and imperious. I told you, Jace Herondale, her voice rang out. Don't let the girl leave the circle. Take her weapon. Clary had barely realized she was still holding the knife. She felt so cold she was nearly numb. But beneath that, a wash of unbearable rage at Lilith, at everything, freed the movement of her arm. She flung the knife at the ground. It skidded across the tiles, fetching up at Jace's feet. He stared down at it blindly, as if he'd never seen a weapon before. Lilith's mouth was a thin red slash. The whites of her eyes had vanished. They were all black. She did not look human. Jace, she hissed. Jace Herondale, you heard me, and you will obey me. Take it, Clary said, looking at Jace. Take it and kill either her or me. It's your choice. Slowly, Jace bent down and picked up the knife. Alec had Sandalphon in one hand, a Hachiwara, good for parrying multiple attackers, in the other. At least 6 cultists lay at his feet, dead or unconscious. Alec had fought quite a few demons in his time, but there was something especially eerie about fighting the cultists of the Church of Talto. They moved all together, less like people than like an eerie dark tide, eerie because they were so silent and so bizarrely strong and fast. They also seemed totally unafraid of death. Though Alec and Isabel shouted at them to keep back, they kept moving forward in a wordless, clustering horde, flinging themselves at the Shadow Hunters with the self-destructive mindlessness of lemmings hurling themselves over a cliff. They had backed Alec and Isabel down the hallway and into the big, open room full of stone pedestals. When the noise of the fight brought Jordan and Maya running, Jordan in wolf form, Maya still human, but with her claws fully out. The cultists seemed barely to register their presence. They fought on, falling one after the other as Alec, Maya, and Jordan laid about themselves with knives, claws, and blades. Isabel's whip traced shimmering patterns in the air as it sliced through bodies, sending fine sprays of blood into the air. Maya especially was acquitting herself well. At least a dozen cultists lay crumpled around her, and she was laying into another one with a blazing fury, her clawed hands red to the wrists. A cultist streaked across Alec's path and lunged at him, hands outstretched. Its hood was up. He couldn't see its face, or guess its sex or age. He sank the blade of Sandalphon into the left side of its chest. It screamed, a male scream, loud and hoarse. The man collapsed, clawing at his chest, where flames were licking at the edge of the torn hole in his jacket. Alec turned away, sickened. He hated watching what happened to humans when a seraph blade pierced their skin. Suddenly, he felt a searing burn across his back and turned to see a second cultist wielding a jagged piece of rebar. This one was hoodless, a man, his face so thin that his cheekbones seemed to be digging through his skin. He hissed and lunged again at Alec, who leaped aside, the weapon whistling harmlessly past him. He spun and kicked it out of the cultist's hand. It rattled to the floor, and the cultist backed up, nearly tripped over a body, and ran. Alec hesitated for a moment. The cultist, who had just attacked him, had nearly made it to the door. Alec knew he ought to follow. For all he knew, the man might be running to warn someone or to get reinforcements. But he felt bone-weary, disgusted, and a little sick. These people might be possessed. They might barely be people anymore, but it still felt too much like killing human beings. He wondered what Magnus would say, but to tell the truth, he already knew. Alec had fought creatures like this before, the cult servants of demons. Almost all that was human about them had been consumed by the demon for energy, leaving nothing but a murderous yearning to kill, and a human body dying slowly in agony. They were beyond help, incurable, unfixable. He heard Magnus's voice as if the warlock stood beside him. Killing them is the most merciful thing you can do. Jamming the Hachiwara back into his belt, Alec gave chase, pounding out the door and into the hall after the fleeing cultist. The hallway was empty, the farthest of the elevator doors jammed open, a weird high-pitched alarm noise sounding through the corridor. Several doorways branched off from the foyer. Shrugging inwardly, Alec picked one at random and dashed through it. He found himself in a maze of small rooms that were barely finished. Drywall had been hastily thrown up, and bouquets of multicolored wire sprouted from holes in the walls. The seraph blade threw a patchwork quilt of light across the walls as he moved cautiously through the rooms, his nerves prickling. At one point, the light caught movement, and he jumped. Lowering the blade, he saw a pair of red eyes and a small gray body skittering into a hole in the wall. Alec's mouth twitched. That was New York for you. Even in a building as new as this one, there were rats. Eventually, the rooms opened out into a larger space. not as large as the room with the pedestals, but more sizable than the others. There was a wall of glass here, too, with cardboard taped across sections of it. A dark shape was huddled in one corner of the room, near an exposed section of piping. Alec approached cautiously. Was it a trick of the light? No. The shape was recognizably human, a bent, huddled figure in dark clothes. Alec's night vision rune twinged as he narrowed his eyes, moving forward. The shape resolved itself into a slim woman, barefoot, her hands chained in front of her to a length of pipe. She raised her head as Alec approached, and the dim light that poured through the windows illuminated her pale white blonde hair.
"Alexander," she said, her voice rich with disbelief. "Alexander Lightwood?"
It was Camille.
"Jace!" Lilith's voice came down like a whip across bare flesh. Even Clary flinched at the sound of it. "I command you to—" Jace's arm drew back, Clary tensed, bracing herself, and he flung the knife at Lilith. It whipped through the air, end over end, and sank into her chest. She staggered back, caught off balance. Lilith's heels skidded on the smooth stone. The demoness righted herself with a snarl, reaching down to pluck the knife from her ribs, spitting something in a language Clary couldn't understand. She let it drop. It fell hissing to the ground, its blade half eaten away, as if by a powerful acid. She whirled on Clary. "What did you do to him? What did you do?" Her eyes had been all black a moment ago. Now they seemed to bulge and protrude. Small black serpents slithered from her eye sockets. Clary cried out and stepped back, almost tripping over a low hedge. This was the Lilith she had seen in Ithuriel's vision, with her slithering eyes and harsh, echoing voice. She advanced on Clary. And suddenly, Jace was between them, blocking Lilith's path. Clary stared. He was himself again. He seemed to burn with a righteous fire, as Raziel had by Lake Lynn that horrible night. He had drawn a seraph blade from his belt, the white silver of it reflected in his eyes. Blood dripped from the rent in his shirt and slicked his bare skin. The way he looked at her, at Lilith. If angels could rise up out of hell, Clary thought, they would look like that. "Michael," he said, and Clary wasn't sure whether it was the strength of the name or the rage in his voice, but the blade he held blazed up brighter than any seraph blade she'd ever seen. She looked aside for a moment, blinded, and saw Simon lying in a crumpled dark heap beside Sebastian's glass coffin. Her heart twisted inside her chest. What if Sebastian's demon blood had poisoned him? The mark of Cain wouldn't help him. It was something he had done willingly, to himself, for her.
Simon.
"Ah, Michael!" Lilith's voice was rich with laughter as she moved toward Jace. "The captain of the hosts of the Lord! I knew him." Jace raised the seraph blade. It blazed like a star, so bright that Clary wondered if all the city could see it, like a searchlight piercing the sky. "Don't come any closer." Lilith, to Clary's surprise, paused. "Michael slew the demon Samael, who I loved," she said. "Why is it, little shadow hunter, that your angels are so cold and without mercy? Why do they break that which will not obey them?"
"I had no idea you were such a proponent of free will," said Jace. And the way he said it, his voice heavy with sarcasm, did more to reassure Clary that he was himself again than anything else would have. "How about letting us all walk off this roof now, then? Me, Simon, Clary? What do you say, demoness? It's over. You don't control me anymore. I won't hurt Clary, and Simon won't obey you. And that piece of filth you're trying to resuscitate, I suggest you get rid of him before he starts to rot, because he isn't coming back, and he's way past his sell-by date." Lilith's face twisted. She spat at Jace, and her spit was a black flame that hit the ground and became a snake that wiggled toward him, its jaws agape.
He smashed it with a booted foot and lunged for the demoness, blade outstretched. But Lilith was gone like a shadow when light shone on it, vanishing and reforming just behind him. As he spun, she reached out almost lazily and slammed her open palm against his chest. Jace went flying. Michael knocked from his hand, skittering across the stone tiles. Jace sailed through the air and struck the low roof wall with such force that splintering lines appeared in the stone. He hit the ground hard, visibly stunned. Gasping, Clary ran for the fallen seraph blade, but never reached it. Lilith caught Clary up in two thin, icy hands and threw her with incredible force. Clary hurtled into a low hedge, the branches slashing viciously at her skin, opening up long cuts. She struggled to free herself, her dress tangled in the foliage. She heard the silk rip as she tore free and turned to see Lilith drag Jace to his feet, her hand fastened in the bloody front of his shirt. She grinned at him, and her teeth were black, too, and gleamed like metal.
"I am glad you're on your feet, little Nephilim. I want to see your face when I kill you, not stab you in the back the way you did my son."
Jace wiped his sleeve across his face. He was bleeding from a long cut along his cheek, and the fabric came away red. "He's not your son. You donated some blood to him. That doesn't make him yours, mother of warlocks." He turned his head and spat blood. "You're not anyone's mother." Lilith's snake eyes darted back and forth furiously. Clary, disentangling herself painfully from the hedge, saw that each of the snake heads had two eyes of its own, glittering and red. Clary's stomach turned as the snakes moved, their gazes seeming to slither up and down Jace's body.
"Cutting my rune apart. How crude," she spat.
"But effective," said Jace.
"You cannot win against me, Jace Herondale," she said. "You may be the greatest shadow hunter this world has known, but I am more than a greater demon."
"Then fight me," said Jace. "I'll give you a weapon. I'll have my seraph blade. Fight me one-on-one, and we'll see who wins." Lilith looked at him, shaking her head slowly, her dark hair swirling around her like smoke.
"I am the oldest of demons," she said. "I am not a man. I have no male pride for you to trick me with. And I am not interested in single combat. That is entirely a weakness of your sex, not mine. I am a woman. I will use any weapon and all weapons to get what I want."
She let go of him then, with a half-contemptuous shove. Jace stumbled for a moment, righting himself quickly and reaching to the ground for the glittering blade of Michael. He seized it just as Lilith laughed and raised her hands. Half-opaque shadows exploded from her open palms. Even Jace looked shocked, as the shadows solidified into the forms of twin black, shadowy demons with shimmering red eyes. They hit the ground, pawing and growling. They were dogs, Clary thought in amazement. Two gaunt, vicious-looking black dogs that vaguely resembled Doberman pinschers. "Hellhounds," breathed Jace.
"Clary!"
He broke off as one of the dogs sprang toward him. Its mouth opened as wide as a shark's, a loud baying howl erupting from its throat. A moment later, the second one leaped into the air, launching itself directly at Clary. "Camille." Alex's head was spinning. "What are you doing here?" He immediately realized that he sounded like an idiot. He fought down the urge to smack himself in the forehead. The last thing he wanted was to look like a fool in front of Magnus's ex-girlfriend.
"It was Lilith," said the vampire woman in a small, trembling voice. "She had her cult members break into the sanctuary. It isn't warded against humans, and they're human, barely. They cut my chains and brought me here, to her."
She raised her hands, the chains binding her wrists to the pipe rattled.
"They brutalized me."
Alec crouched down, bringing his eyes on a level with Camille's. Vampires didn't bruise.
They healed too quickly for that. But her hair was matted with blood on the left side.